This is continuing coverage in the trial of Alex Murdaugh from True Crime Today.
Welcome back to our continuing coverage. I'm Tony Bruschi. Here we are, day 21 on the 23rd of February, 2023. It's the day that Alex Murdaugh took the stand in his own defense. Let's go to the courtroom.
Mr. Murdaugh, if you'll come forward and stand in front of me, and Madam Clerk, if you will swear him.
Yes, sir. Good morning.
Good morning. At this time, I'm going to explain to you certain of your rights. If you do not understand anything I say, please let me know, and I will explain it in greater detail. Do you understand?
Yes, sir.
Now, we have now reached the stage of the trial in which you are presenting your defense. And you have the right to claim the protections given to you by the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution of the United States. This amendment states in part that no person shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself. And this means that you cannot be required to testify. You do, however, have the right to testify on your own behalf. However, no one can make you testify. Whether or not you testify is a personal right, and no one can waive this right except you. If you decide to testify, you will be subject to the same rules that govern other witnesses, and you may be examined and cross-examined on any relevant issue in this case. If you decide to testify, the decision on your part must be freely, voluntarily, and intelligently made with knowledge of the protections given to you by the Fifth Amendment and the consequences of your decision to testify. As I understand it, you have no convictions involving dishonesty or false statements or any crimes punishable by more than 1 year imprisonment. But as it relates to any other relevant issue as determined by the court, you may be examined or cross-examined on any relevant issue. Do you understand?
I do, yes, sir.
If you decide not to testify, I will instruct the jurors that they cannot give the fact that you did not testify any consideration whatsoever, and that there is to be absolutely no prejudice to you because you did not testify. It is left entirely up to you whether or not you testify. You may talk with your attorneys, Mr. Harpootlian, Mr. Griffin, Mr. Barber, Ms. Fox, family, friends, or anyone else, but the final decision will be left entirely up to you. Do you understand what I've explained?
Yes, sir, I do.
Do you have any questions whatsoever as to what I've explained?
No, sir, thank you.
Yes, sir. And you've talked with your lawyers about whether or not you've testified. Mr. Harpootlian just suggested advice he's given to you. The court has no comment whatsoever as to whether you should or should not testify. But do you wish to confer with lawyers some more about whether or not you should testify?
No, sir. I don't need to talk to them anymore.
Have you made a decision as to whether you're going to testify?
Yes, sir.
All right. And what is your decision?
I am going to testify. I want to testify.
All right. Very well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, we'll have one short witness before Mr. Murdaugh.
Very well.
The jury is present, sir.
Sir, thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Day number 23. The defense's case, you may call your next witness.
Your Honor, the defense calls no one to you.
sworn in. Watch your step, then. Place your left hand on the Bible and raise your right. You swear or affirm that the testimony you give today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do.
Thank you. You'll come to the witness stand and have a seat, please. The microphone is very sensitive. You have to get quite right up on it. But if you would state your full name again, and please spell your last name, please.
Nolan Tuten, T-U-T-E-N.
Good morning.
Morning.
Would you please tell the jury a little bit about yourself?
I grew up in Hampton County. Grew up around Paul and Maggie. I went to school at Wade Hampton. Played sports with Buster growing up, and just were lifelong friends.
What do you do?
I work in the timber business.
Okay. And do you know Alex?
I do.
Okay. And how long have you known Alex for?
Pretty much my whole life.
Did you spend a lot of time with Alex and his family?
I did.
Okay. And how would you describe your relationship with Paul?
He was one of my best friends. I mean, considered him like a little brother to me. We were really close.
How about tell the jury a little bit about Paul?
Paul's one of those guys that would, I mean, you could call him at the drop of the hat and he would come. I mean, he was, you know, there for you always. He would call you nonstop all throughout the day, every day. And, I mean, he would do, you know, whatever he could for you, whenever he could for you. And
how often did you talk to Paul?
Every day.
Every day. How often did you see him?
A couple times a week, most weeks.
Okay. And when you saw him, where would y'all be?
I mean, it depended. He would come to my house. I would go to Moselle. You know, I would see him on the boat. I mean, we would just go hunt together, fish together, just do whatever we really felt like doing.
Okay. And other than hunting and fishing, what else did you guys do together?
We hung around Moselle. We farmed at Moselle, you know, whatever we felt like doing, really.
And when you were with Paul outside doing these activities, did he have his phone with him normally?
Most times, yeah.
Okay. And did he ever put it down?
He did sometimes, not a whole lot. I mean, it was either in his hand or in his pocket. But if he had something in his hand, he would, you know, set it down either in the truck or somewhere close to him. I mean, it would be within reach and distance.
Okay. What was your impression from the time you spent with the family as to how they got along?
I mean, they all had a really good relationship, I felt like. I mean, when I was around, there was always kind of laughing and, you know, a good relationship, good family relationship.
Did you have a nickname for Alex?
Big Red.
Okay. And how would you describe the relationship between Paul and Alex?
They had a really good relationship.
Would you say that Alex was patient with Paul?
He was.
Now, you mentioned that you guys hunted together. Are you familiar with the types of guns that Paul had?
I was.
Okay. And did he ever use a 300 Blackout?
He did.
Okay. And what's your understanding of where he got that?
Buster and Paul got two for Christmas one year. One, Buster had a black one. Paul had a tan one. And they were at Moselle. And then Paul's went missing or, you know, got stolen or whatever happened to it. And then there was just the black one at Moselle that we used, more or less.
Okay. When you were at Moselle, what did you do with Paul?
Rode around, you know, played around at the house, messed around at the sheds. You know, we would go ride the buggies, ride in the truck, you know, go fish, go hunt, go farm.
When you rode around at Moselle, what vehicles would you ride in?
It really depended, honestly, what was closest to get into from the house. It was, you know, sometimes my truck, sometimes Paul's truck, sometimes golf cart, Ranger, whatever we felt like riding in.
Okay. Did you ever ride in the black Ford F-150?
I did.
Okay. And are you familiar with where the kennels are located?
Yes.
At Moselle? Okay. And if you and Paul were at the house, would you guys typically walk to the kennels or would you drive down there?
We would never walk. We would drive or ride something.
Okay. And were there ever times where you noticed Paul with guns in his trucks on Moselle?
All the time.
Did he have the 300 Blackout with him in the trucks?
A lot of times, yes.
Okay. And were there ever guns left in the shed by the dog kennels?
They were sometimes not a whole lot, but there were, you know, sometimes left there and then picked up later.
Okay. What about the hanger?
Same.
Now, Maggie, tell me about Maggie.
She's a very sweet woman. She would, you know, do whatever. She treated me like I was one of her own. She's just really, really sweet woman.
And would she go down to the dog kennels?
She would.
And how would she get there?
It just depended, really. She would drive her car sometimes. She would walk sometimes. She would ride her bicycle. She would ride a Ranger or a golf cart. It, you know, however she felt like getting down there.
Okay. Let's go to the day of June 7th.
Okay.
Walk me through that day.
That morning I got up and I talked to Paul either over the weekend or Friday or one of those days, and we had talked about CB had sprayed the sunflowers. And so I'd gone out to Moselle that morning and rode by the sunflowers to see if they were actually dead yet or not. And I noticed that they were dead. So then, you know, Paul and I talked, I don't know, around 10 or 11 that morning, and about kind of coming up with a plan about how to get them plowed up under and replanted. So then I went to work and stayed at work all day pretty much. We were supposed to go out that afternoon and start plowing the sunflowers under. And I got stuck at work late and talked to Paul throughout the day, and I wasn't going to make it that night. And so I went home after work, and then I got the call around 10:30 or so, 11, sometime around there, and came back to Moselle, and you know, everything had happened.
When you talked to Paul that morning, what, if any, understanding did you have as to where he was?
He was in Okotie. He was working for John Marvin at the time.
Okay, and then you guys made plans to meet at Moselle that
That's
afternoon.
That's right, yes.
Okay. When you called him on the way home, what, if any, understanding did you have as to where he was?
When I talked to him on the way home, he was driving from Okotie to Moselle when I spoke to him.
Where were you when you got the news about Maggie and Paul?
I was at home.
Okay. And did you go to Moselle?
I did.
Okay. Did you see Alex?
I did.
How would you describe him?
He was pretty distraught. He was, when I got there, he and I saw each other, and we both kind of walked towards each other, and he gave me a hug and just started crying and told me they were gone.
That may be all I have. Beg the court's indulgence. Clarification. Your plans to meet up with Paul on June 7th.
Right.
Was that plan to address the issue you had seen in the with sunflowers?
That's right.
Okay. No further questions.
By the state.
Nolan, good morning. How are you?
Good. How about you?
Doing well. Nolan, we've met a bunch of times, right?
Yes.
Prior to trial, we've met in Colleton, we've met elsewhere. We've had quite a few conversations, is that fair to say?
We have.
Okay. And you've had a lot of conversations with law enforcement also.
They
were sometimes there at the meetings.
Yes.
Okay. You were as close a friend as Paul as there could be, is that fair to say?
I feel like that, yes.
Okay. And I just want you to say again, he was the kind of guy that if you needed something in the middle of the night, you could call him.
Yes.
Was he going to be there for you?
He was going to come.
Flat tire side of the road, Paul's there for you.
He was there.
Okay. You also, I think, and Maggie, I think you referred to her as a second mom.
I did.
Kind of, they adopted you into the family. You were treated like one of the group. Is that fair to say?
That's right.
And what year did you graduate high school?
2014.
And what year was Paul at Wade Hampton?
He didn't go to Wade Hampton.
Oh, what year was he graduating high school? Sorry.
I want to say 17 or 18.
So you were a little older than Paul.
That's right. He was the same age as my younger brother, Nate.
And your younger brother, I know we already heard, it's Nathan, too.
That's right. Yes.
And he testified previously in this trial.
That's right.
So your years in high school would actually align with
Buster's.
More Buster's, and Paul was a little younger than
you. That's right.
I think you mentioned that Paul was an avid cell phone user. Is that fair to say?
That's fair.
He used it all the time.
Yep.
Which may be part of the reason why he was so responsive when you needed something, because he always was there to answer the call or respond to a text. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
Do you consider yourself someone that has a fair amount of knowledge about firearms?
I feel like it, yes.
Are you an avid hunter?
I am.
And you've had a lot of experience with firearms yourself?
I have.
And a lot of experience with the family's firearms?
Yes, sir.
Gain kind of a knowledge of what people tend to use or favor?
Yes, sir.
And is it fair to say that, let's talk about the 300 blackout. Paul's 300 blackout, I think you just testified to, that they received as a Christmas gift.
Right.
Now, Buster's, when they received it, Buster's 300 blackout was what color?
It was black.
And Paul's 300 blackout was what color?
It was like a sand color.
Okay. And you, hanging out with Paul, and I'm going to talk about somewhere in like 2017, 2018, did you go to a Halloween party with Paul?
We did.
Right. Did you actually ride with him?
From my recollection, yes.
And it wasn't uncommon for Paul to have his kind of favorite guns in the car with him. Is that fair to say?
That's fair.
And on this occasion, when you went to this party, did Paul have that 300, his tan 300 blackout with him?
He did.
But this is back in like 2017, 2018.
It was a while ago, yes, sir.
Before COVID.
That's right.
The new designation, before right. COVID, after COVID. And tell us what happened. What happened that night?
I mean, we were at a Halloween party, and we had been around Moselle most of the day, and, you know, we left, and then later on, the gun was gone. The gun was missing, whether, you know, whatever happened to it, you know, we no longer had it.
So, it was there before you went to the party, and then y'all come back, and it's out of the car.
That's right.
Now, this was really nice rifle, right?
It was
a fairly expensive rifle, and the scope on it is a very expensive scope.
That's right.
So it wasn't like it was misplaced. It was, do you believe it was stolen?
I believe so, yes.
All right. And then going to guns, did Paul have a shotgun that he favored?
He did.
Was it the and have you paid attention to any of the trial?
I've watched some, yes. Okay.
And is it, without going ahead and rooting through the guns, is it that camo in color Benelli Super Flag Eagle 3 that the state has in evidence?
That's right.
That's Paul's shotgun?
That was the one he favored the most, yes.
And then did Paul also have a 300 blackout on him at all times?
He did,
What did Paul do after his rifle was stolen? What did he use then?
When his rifle was stolen, he more or less took Buster's as his own. So
he started using Buster's. Is that because Buster really didn't use that very much?
Buster was in school, you know, either in Wofford or in Columbia. So Buster came to Moselle a fair amount, but Paul was there more, and so Paul just, you know, used it as his own.
And then Buster had a shotgun he'd favor. I think we'd already heard about it, but is it a Benelli Super Black Eagle Model 2?
That's right.
And do you know the differences between the Super Black Eagle models?
I do.
Then I think your brother already testified to that, but there's markings on the shotguns that you can look at and tell if you know what you're looking for.
That's right.
And then I believe Alex favored a Super Black Eagle Model 1.
That's right. He either shot the 1 or the 2. Okay.
So we have 1, 2, and 3 models.
Right.
For the same Benelli Super Black Eagle, but models 1, 2, and 3.
That's right.
And those are all 12 gauges typically that was used.
That's
as
right.
A kind of general use.
Mm-hmm.
I think you also mentioned that about guns being left down at the kennel area. You said it was occasional. Is that fair to say?
That's fair to say.
They weren't stored down there, right?
That's right.
Permanently. Nothing was stored down there.
No, nothing was stored down there.
And it was usually, if guns were left, would it be mostly in just the hunting seasons?
That's right.
Okay.
It would either be during, you know, the hunting seasons, or, you know, if Paul was cleaning out his truck, you know, he would.
And when are the hunting seasons for, like, deer and duck and turkey? When are those hunting seasons?
Deer season is typically in the fall, sometime August to January. Duck season is, you know, around Thanksgiving to the end of January. And turkey season is March 22nd to May 1st, somewhere around there.
Were you, and you've spent a lot of time at Moselle. I think you already talked about that. Were you around before the, how many entrances and exits are there at Moselle, the property? Were you around before when there was only one entrance and exit? So when there was only one entrance and exit, the main exit, entrance and exit, where was that one?
That was by the kennels.
Okay. And is that actually where the mailbox is?
That's right.
And I think packages are sent that way.
They would typically go to the shed, to the hangar.
And then at some point in the future, a second exit was created where some brickwork was done, sort of leading from the house.
That's right.
Is that accurate as well?
That is.
You all spent a lot of time at the kennel area, kind of the hangar kennel area?
We did.
It's kind of a good collection point for whatever y'all were doing, whether it was working on the heavy equipment there or hunting and getting ready for things. Is that
That's correct.
A fair thing to say? It's a good collection point?
Yes, sir.
For y'all? And I think out there there's also a processing shed for if
there
you
is.
Killed anything?
Yes, sir.
And if you all are down there and, you know, say Maggie or Alex were at the house and they, you know, obviously knew you were down there, would they tend to come drop by before they would leave just to see if y'all needed anything?
More often than not, yeah.
All right. And knowing Paul as well as you do, is it, and we've heard a lot about him, is it fair to say that he had a lifestyle that was just fairly unpredictable?
Absolutely.
I mean, he was traveling the state, whether it was Columbia, Charleston, the Low Country, wherever. He was everywhere, right?
That's correct.
And he actually kept clothes in many different places just for that reason, because he was such a traveler.
He did.
So you talk to him almost every day, right?
That's right.
But for those that maybe weren't so close to him, it would be fairly hard to even know where he was going to be on any given day.
That's right.
Unless you kept in frequent contact with him, right?
That's fair to say.
He was everywhere. Any given day, during the week, who knows where he could be? Mm-hmm. Fair to say? All right, so I'm going to talk to you about June 7th, 2021. And that's the day you lost your best friend.
That's right.
And that's a tough day for you, is that right?
It is.
You talked to Paul that day on the phone.
I did.
In the morning and afternoon times. Is that accurate?
Yes, sir.
And I know you just testified to it, but walk me through again, if you wouldn't mind. I believe y'all were talking about the sunflowers. They died.
We were.
And you often helped out on the farm. Is that also fair to say?
I did, yes.
Meaning farm-related stuff, tilling the ground and planting seeds and all that stuff.
That's right.
You were pretty active in the maintaining of the duck ponds and the corn fields for the hunting purposes too, right?
That's right.
So if Paul needed something, he'd typically call on you.
That's right.
He'd call on you to help out.
Yes.
And is that what happened on leading up to and on June 7th?
Yes, it was. You know, he knew that I was riding by, because typically when you spray something, it takes a couple days before it actually takes effect. So it happened. CB sprayed them, I want to say, Thursday or Friday. So we really couldn't get a good idea what was actually done, the harm that was actually done, until a few days later. And I was going to be riding by Moselle that morning to go to work. So I just swung in there to check on them and see what it was, where we could come up with a game plan on what to do.
And you had pretty free use of the property, meaning you could show up and come and go as you please. That wasn't weird, right?
That's right.
So the fact that you went there that morning to check on stuff, that's That's actually pretty normal for you?
That's right.
And so you show up on that morning and check the sunflowers, and they're dying. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
So the decision was made that y'all would have to and why do you need sunflowers? What's the purpose of those?
They attract doves. You know, we plant them, you know, kind of corn, sunflowers in the dove field, you know, to have dove hunts.
So it's important to, for hunting purposes, it's important to maintain a dove field. You call it the dove field.
That's
or
right.
The sunflower field.
Yeah, it's a good attractant. Yeah.
So the decision made then to till the field and replant the sunflowers.
That's correct.
It wasn't too late in the year and the season. You could still get some good growth out.
That's
of it.
Right.
And this is something you're pretty familiar with and you've done a number of times before with Paul?
Yes, sir.
All right. So what do you relay to Paul then?
I talked to Paul, told him that they were, in fact, dying, and we had to restart. So he and I had talked about coming up with a game plan, meeting up that afternoon at Moselle to go ahead and get the tractor hooked up and begin plowing them under.
And ultimately, you weren't able to make it that day. Is that
true? That's correct.
Okay. What did you have going on?
I got hung up at work around the Columbia area.
So the plan then became we're just gonna do it later,
that's right?
Fine. We'll do it sometime later in the week.
Yes.
Now, leading up to these events, you received a Snapchat from Paul around 7 p.m. Is that right?
Sometime around there, yes.
Sometime in the evening time.
That's right.
And tell us what that Snapchat was. Snapchat's like a video image that someone can send you?
That's correct, yes.
And tell us about what that Snapchat was.
It was a video of the John Deere High Boy sprayer. One of the cylinders on the back to spread the boom to spray was leaking pretty bad, so he was sending me a video to show me how bad it was leaking.
Okay. And a tiller is a piece of farm equipment. Is that correct?
What is it?
Sorry?
Repeat your question.
You said a tiller? Is that
the high boy?
High boy. Is that a piece of farm equipment?
It is.
And is that the thing you would use then to plow the fields?
That's what we would use to spray.
Spray. Sorry. Thank you. Okay. And it was leaking some sort of fluid, meaning it was maybe broken.
That's right.
Now you've in all the times we've met, the number of times, did you have a chance to listen to what we call it kind of the kennel video?
I did.
And did you when listening to it, did you identify the voices on that video?
I did.
Having known the family, what voices did you hear on that video when you
Paul,
heard
it? Miss Maggie, and it, Mr. Elliott.
All right, down at the kennel area, too, if you're down there at nighttime, I assume you've been down there around the nighttime, the hangar kennel area, it's actually pretty fairly well-lit area if the lights are all turned on. Is that
That's
true?
Correct.
So not only is there the hangar lights inside the hangar, but then there's lights on the outside of the hangar as well.
That's right.
Is that true?
Yes.
And is it true, then, also that the kennels have lights, both fan lights and overhead lights?
That's correct.
So if you're down there in the middle of the night, even though there may not be any, you know, street lighting or anything like that, the kennel area and the hangar are all brightly lit with, like, fluorescent lighting.
Yes, sir.
And you would you be able to see the lighting if you were at the Moselle house? Would you be able to look down, if it's nighttime, would you be able to look down and see the well-lit area?
You could, yes.
All right, so we're on June 7th. What's the last communication you have with Paul?
That phone call.
And phone call you go to bed. Sorry, go ahead.
The phone call and the Snapchat.
And you then go to bed that night thinking it's just any other night. Is that right?
That's correct.
And I think you testified to it, but you were woken up at what time?
It was around 10:30. Between 10:30 and 11, my mom had called me, and she had heard something had happened at Moselle, so I tried to call Paul and text Paul and didn't get a response, so I got in the truck and rode over there as fast as I could.
And at the time, were you living fairly close by?
I was living closer to Alameda. It was probably a 20 to 25 minute drive to Moselle.
When you arrived at the scene, what entrance did you go to initially?
Initially, I was coming down Moselle Road, and I noticed all the first responders over towards the kennel area. And so I pulled in there, and they wouldn't let me in. So then I backed up and came in through the brick columns and made my way around.
Okay. And when you arrived, what did you observe?
Oh, when I got there, there were a lot of first responders out, and I could see two bodies laying, one by the corner of the shed and one by the feed room door, and they had sheets over them.
And by the time you arrived, law enforcement had already cordoned off the area?
They had.
But you could, where the tractor equipment was housed, you could kind of stand around back there?
That's correct.
And even though it's set further back, you could still see sort of the scene?
Yes.
Who was there with you when you arrived?
When I arrived, it was myself, Alec, Randy, Ronnie Crosby, Mark Ball, and I think that's it at the time. People started coming. When I got there, a lot of people started coming, showing up.
And I know you testified to it, and it's obviously understandable. Everyone's pretty upset, right?
Yes.
Did you have a chance then to interact with Alex?
I did.
And is he here today?
He is.
Is he sitting at counsel table right there in between his lawyers?
He is.
And I think you said you hugged, is that right?
We did.
And what thing did he repeat to you twice?
The boat wreck. The boat wreck, the boat wreck.
That's the thing he said to you.
That's right.
And did he also ask you to get in touch with Rogan?
He did.
And you know Rogan Gibson?
I do.
Friends with him as well?
Yes, sir.
So the two things he says to you there is, two of the things he says is the boat wreck. I think he said the effing boat wreck. Is that right?
He did.
And get in touch with Rogan.
Yeah, it was a little while later, but yes, he asked me to call Rogan.
Okay. Beg the court's indulgence.
Thank you. Redirect.
You mentioned that Paul would clean his cars out down by the kennel area,
right?
His trucks. Are you aware that he took his truck in to be serviced Friday?
Yes.
Okay. And he cleaned that out before he went?
Yes.
Okay. And if you're at the house in Moselle, mm-hmm. Can you see in detail at night what's happening at the kennels?
You could just see the lights, and you could tell that the lights were on, and you could see the roof, but that's really about all you could see.
So just the roof and just the lights?
That's right.
Okay.
You noticed something was down there, but you weren't really able to tell exactly what it was.
Okay, and going back to June 7th, you went out there in the morning for the dove field?
That's right.
Okay, and did you see the black Ford F-50 up at the house?
I did.
Thank you. No further questions.
Thank you.
Nothing else, Your Honor.
Thank you. You may step down. Ladies and gentlemen, we have you go to the jury room for a short break. Please do not discuss the case. Mr. Harpooling, do you need any additional time to confer with Mr. Murdoch?
He indicates he doesn't need to talk to me. It hurts my feelings, but we don't need any break. However, Your Honor, he does need to visit the restroom before we start this process.
All right. We'll take a recess about 10 minutes.
That wraps up segment one of our continuing coverage in the trial of Alec Murdaugh. There is much more to come today. Be sure to press subscribe so you don't miss a moment of it. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.